On the other side of the Atlantic, my damp palms clutch a grease-stained paper bag during a two-hour bus ride from Paris to the Normandy beaches. The other tourists keep a safe distance rows away, as I am set to burst. Motion sickness bothered me since childhood, though Dad never believed me. Thought I was faking. Fits of sweat, swaying, my nervous stomach would bloat and burn. I'd start burping, pleading to my dad, crack a window, if I could only breathe. But he always kept them locked. Ever the dictator. One day after school, though, it was too late, and projectile vomit splattered all over the leather interior of his light blue 1962 Buick Riviera. He occasionally opened the window for me an inch thereafter. I should have canceled this tour, spent my last vacation day in Versailles to poke around the grounds of frivolity and excess. Revolutions intrigue me. But in the tour bus office, I saw a Normandy pamphlet, felt guilty passing it up. It was there my grandfather risked his life. D-Day. Just make it to the first sight, I tell myself. This will mean something to him. The coach roams through rustic towns of slate roof cottages and pastures of white cattle. As we near Cannes, getting closer to the coastline, almost all of the homes post American and French flags, full staffed. Some say the French hate us, but not here. Here they remember, after all this time. We reach the first tour stop, Utah Beach. This was his stop too. I leave the coach as fast as I can, breathing in the salty air to calm my guts. With a half an hour to walk around, I head towards the ocean and quickly realize this was not the beach I had imagined. Acres of grass, rocks, and patches of sand positioned on a cliff. Jade and dandelions scatter the grounds, but the fields are fractured. About every 20 yards lay gaping holes at least 10 feet deep and wide. My World War II pamphlet claims Navy missiles left these craters during the invasion. Now, the holes are overrun by weeds and tourists. I descend one crater to inspect its size and am struck in the thigh by two racing toddlers. Up and over the hole, back and forth, they run with piercing laughter. Americans, probably. I suppose it's not the kids' fault their parents let them shout and sprint over an unmarked cemetery. If my grandfather was here, he would curse, but I just ignore them. Further towards the cliff rests a massive bunker still intact. Embedded into the ground, the octagon-shaped fortress of concrete could easily hold 10, 20 men with enough room for large weaponry. I begin to take some pictures of the design when a heavyset man with loud beach trunks and shabby Nikes finds his way into my shot. He stands there inside the remains, grazing on a candy bar and inspecting the walls like he's reading hieroglyphics. Minutes pass. Just one clean picture is all I want. A few tourists give up on the perfect photo and move on, and I do the same. I continue towards the overhang. It's a 100-foot drop above a beach, secured by rusted barbed wiring. Hovering near the edge, I separate myself from other onlookers and observe the sun's brilliance off the water, the mirage of rocks across the channel to Dover, and envision my grandfather beyond that point, a 19-year-old preparing for battle. The sight urges me to call him, despite the dollar-a-minute charge and one bar of service. After two rings, a loud voice picks up. "Hey, kid!" I shout over the wind. "Grandpa, guess what? I just got to Utah Beach." "Oh yeah, I've been there." He proceeds to ask me how my trip is going. That's all I get. Without warning, the gentleness in his voice throws me. My throat constricts. I inhale through my nose as the stomach prepares for vomit. How can I be motion sick now, so far from the bus? And then I see. It isn't nausea. I'm not sick. I'm angry. Angry at whom or what, I do not know. I stare into the sea. It knew everything that happened here. I know nothing. Nothing about what he did, what it all meant. What use were the few facts from history class or old movies? How nonchalant he had been. How simple he made it sound. But there could be no doubt. His survival on this beach was luck. He should have died that day, and I should not have lived. I hurry to get off the line before he detects my distress. Well, I better go, Grandpa. Don't want the bus to leave me. Okay, Alicia, be safe. And with his goodbye, I stand there, weeping, as the waves stalk the shoreline below for what seems like three lifetimes. I collect myself before boarding, borrow some antacid from a fellow tourist to get the hell over my queasiness. My grandfather fought here, 10,000 troops died here, and I couldn't survive a damn bus ride without complaint. Omaha Beach and the American Cemetery are just a few miles away. As we approach, all is adorned with deep red and gold garlands and fancy lighting. Enormous blue banners surround the entrance stating, Obama, Sarkozy, Brown, Spielberg, Hanks. Hundreds of tourists, veterans, and families visit the flat lawns of white headstones in preparation for the 65th anniversary of D-Day the next day. I completely forgot.
Corporal James DeFonso, United States Marine Corps, Infantry, Ramadi, Iraq, September 2006 to May 2007. The landing ship tank bobbed in the steady waters as 200 GIs gazed at those before them being cut down by rapid machine gun fire. They were anxious enough, and Ike had kept them waiting, all 160,000 men lingering in the choppy Atlantic. General Dwight Eisenhower intended to attack the day before but needed the full moon of June 6, 1944 to illuminate the cliffs and calm the tides. Now, it was dawn. Bloodshot eyes, tears, and vomit filled the last moments aboard the vessel, but Dell was silent. He refused to fear the worst, figuring he was a dead man anyway, so why worry? Certainly, he would do anything to survive, fight until the end, but obsessing over death was another matter. The constant dread would lead to panic, dull the senses, he believed, inviting death sooner. It's just one of those things you have to accept. Worrying does nothing for you, except get you killed. You can't let it bother you, or it takes control. You can only hope it's quick. Private First Class Anthony Del Rossi was part of the 629th Army Combat Engineers, 1111th Group. The Light Equipment Company, as they were termed, supported civil infantries with engineering maneuvers and supplies. The trench warfare of World War I and the advanced engineering of the Germans taught the U.S. that technical specialists were critical to forward progress. Subsequently, combat engineers were called to fight alongside infantrymen, and in some cases, were better trained. Dell's mission for Operation Overlord was to drive the munitions truck packed with Bangalore torpedoes, dynamite, TNT, and all explosive material to the guys positioned on the beach. The Germans dug deep into the coastline of Utah Beach, constructing concrete bunkers manned with heavy artillery. The stronghold seemed impenetrable, fully protected with the high ground as their advantage. The location made U.S. attacks almost futile. The Navy released the LSTs about 100 yards offshore, worried that the steel burials Rommel had planted in the water would rip their ships apart. Field Marshal Erwin Rommel radically improved coastline defenses for the German army and was one of Hitler's most skilled and trusted commanders. But in the coming months, he would question the fierce tactical decisions and sanity, encouraging him to end the war. By October, Rommel was accused of conspiracies against Hitler and told to consume cyanide or undergo a public hearing where his family could, or certainly would, be implicated. He chose the capsule. As the last aboard the landing ship tank, Dell was the first to disembark. They dropped the ramp about 50 yards from the beach, and the 2.5-ton truck plunged to the ocean floor. That son of a bitch submerged 12 feet at least and would have flooded had we not waterproofed it back in Bristol, he says. Dell used duck seal, a pliable clay-like substance on all the greased fittings, frame, and engine. The only part that needed air to operate was the carburetor. So, Dell attached the large flexible hose around the entire carburetor and positioned the top of the hose to stand above water. The hose essentially worked like a snorkel, giving him a good minute or two of air.
Drive on the water. Truck was actually, I was sitting in water, driving to the shore. Without the waterproofing, we never made it. You know, they didn't get close enough, so we had to go on water. Yeah, they didn't do the job right. Men, Yeah, some of the guys drowned. Their equipment was too heavy. You know, the Navy, unfortunately, didn't get close enough to the shore. And so when they hit the water with all that gear on you, that's a lot of weight. 95 pounds. And so you sunk right to the bottom. And if you didn't get rid of your boots and clothes, take off whatever you could, you didn't make it. That's how a lot of guys drowned. I was wondering what the hell was going on. You know, they weren't supposed to do that. Yeah. It's been a long while since I thought about it. It was kind of a horrible moment, you know. Yeah, that was bad time. It's one of the things that happened during the war, I guess.
Once Dell's vehicle hit the shore, he delivered Bangalores for the engineers to blow up the concrete bunkers. They were pipe bombs, really, but they worked. The engineers attached thin metal cylinders together, about 40 feet long, loaded them with amitol, and shoved their heads in the sand. But in order to be effective, close range was needed, and engineers fell. The shoreline was becoming increasingly difficult to penetrate, so the Navy and Army Air Corps commenced shelling the bunkers. The planes dropped a flare for the battleships to target with missiles. The plan was successful for the most part, but the artillery also fell on the shoreline. Dell didn't know whether the ships confused their marks or if the drops were miscalculated, but on they went, blasting the beach, blasting GIs and Germans. Firepower flew overhead and flattened everything in range. Stillness followed by absolute heat and momentum. No warning, instant death. The screams were silent. Faceless carcasses, scattered torsos, seared guts, and gray smoke. Dell had nowhere to go but forward through the bombs and bodies and weave this sitting duck of flammables up the beach. The Allied forces overpowered the German resistance on the Normandy beaches 5 days later. Thousands of corpses masked the coast, and Omaha Beach lost almost 10 times as many men than Utah. Dell swore the Navy and Army Air Corps killed more GIs during Operation Overlord than Germans. Friendly fire was random, often, and classified. To this day, historians and governments disagree on the number of D-Day casualties because many of the bodies simply disintegrated or were swept into the ocean. They approximate 10,000 Allied troops died, but how many missing in action remain unclear. Perhaps Private Del Rossi was right all along. The truth would never escape the beach.
Thank you to War, Literature, and the Arts for publishing the original version of this piece, France in June. As mentioned in the preface, I hope to ask a question or two of each of our veteran readers. A question which captures the theme or crisis of the narrative. I should mention, to kick off this podcast, I asked my brother James to partly narrate, given the familial story angle. James is the youngest of the three of us. I'm the oldest, Tony's in the middle. But when we go out together, people always think James is the oldest. The truth is, James looks older because of the war. And so I asked him to come on the show. James, thanks for coming in. My question to you is, you know, do you see yourself at all in Grandpop's experience? Is there any part of the D-Day landing that connects to you as similar or dissimilar to your experience arriving in Iraq?
Very similar connection, I think, would be you're in a vehicle. We use 7 tons. We were in the back of a big 7-ton truck with a tarp over this, so we couldn't see anything on the outside. But you're just driving down a strip while you hear explosions and gunfire, and you're kind of just waiting to get hit. Lucky for me, I never got hit. A lot of people did, but that sense of constant worry while you're just in a sitting duck. Yeah. So you're just in the back of this truck, all geared up, ready to go, but just a sitting duck in a truck, ready to blow up. So Grandpa fought against a uniformed military. You know, with real strategy, you know, real leaders. Ours is more just a bunch of renegades who can be anyone on the street, anytime. The enemy was all around constantly. You know, you don't, right when you think you're in a safe zone, you're not. And you can't just go around putting innocent people on the ground or shooting them. So you kind of just have to wait to get shot at and then retaliate. The one thing I read in there that I completely agree with is you have to not worry about dying. Because if you become hesitant because you're scared of dying, you're not going to do your job. I can't not enter a room because I might get shot if I go in there. You have to go in there and you got to outmaneuver, out aggression, out your enemy. You know, you got to beat him in every way. So in that sense, I agree with you. You got to let go of fear and death. And most any real combat veteran, and I say real, I mean just because, you know, people deploy and kudos, but any veteran who's been in the shit in actual combat, firefights, ambushes, they know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to attack with everything you got. You can't be hesitant. And you have to let go of worrying about dying. And once you do, you're a lot better at your job.
So let me ask you this last question then. In the earlier part, the part that I narrate that discusses my trip to Normandy Beach and realizing the fact that Grandpa lived was nothing short of, it seemed like a miracle, or anybody that lived that day. So do you ever think to yourself, if he didn't live, then I wouldn't be here? Have you ever thought, like, whether it was reading the narration or any time in your life, knowing what Grandpa did, do you ever think, well, man, I wouldn't even be here?
Yeah, surprisingly, I have thought about that, because for him to get out of there alive is nothing short of a miracle, like you said, and then ended up having my mother, ended up having me. And that always sneaks in the back of my mind of maybe that's why I got out of a lot of close calls when I was in combat, things I should have died 10 times over, but somehow I always got out of it, you know, got out of it clean and unscathed for the most part. And so maybe, you know, I always think that maybe that's what I'm supposed to do, come back here and for some sort of meaning, at least I hope that, not just that it was for nothing.